All right, so we are in Philippians chapter 2. And we kind of stopped in verse 16. And so we see in verse 16, this is in the largest narrative of being in the light of the world. And Paul writes here, I'm going to back up into 14 so we have a little bit more context. Do all things without grumbling or disputing. Well, okay. Yeah, apparently my story had relevance. That you may be blameless and innocent children of God without blemish in the midst of a crooked and twisted generation, among whom you shine as lights of the world, holding fast to the word of life, so that in the day of Christ I may be proud that I didn't run in vain or labor. In vain? That's, I didn't run in vain or labor in vain? That's okay. Even if I am to be poured out as a drink offering upon the sacrificial offering of your faith, I am glad and rejoice with all, you all. Likewise, you also should be glad and rejoice with me. So here we see, this is Paul. This is Paul talking about that there's going to be problems in your life, and he doesn't really know what those problems are. And frankly, I think everybody kind of has the same problems for the most part. I mean, there are people that have really real problems, but in the general, when you're talking about the everyday busyness of life, I think all of us pretty much have the same things we worry about. We worry about security. We worry about finances. We worry about our family. And he's not really making any distinction here between those problems and what might separate you from someone else. But he's making it clear, though, that you're going to have these problems. Like what James says in chapter 1, when you counter trials, not if you counter trials, consider it joy. And so, again, this is a point where I see where Paul is not different from James. Paul is exactly the same as James, because what does he say to do? He says to rejoice. He says this phrase quite often. I said at least 13 times. This is a good thing to highlight if you're going through the book of Philippians. It's a heightened number of times he says joy or rejoice. Especially with him. And so Paul tells him to rejoice with him because why? What's going on in Paul's life right now? Sorry?
Problems.
Well, do you know a specific problem? Yes, house arrest or prison. And so Paul definitely has reason to complain. And I think he kind of does a little bit. Part of that is just human nature. He uses that a point of illustration. But if they knew his situation, I think it's one of those things where, well, he probably didn't have to say it. I often think that we take these people in the Bible and we like to put them on a pedestal and say, oh, well, these are people that we couldn't be. But God, we understand that God works with everyday people. He does work with the good people, but mostly the people he works with are everyday. He could have chosen you to do these things. And every day I'm thankful that he didn't. But Paul was not even just an everyday person. Paul was one of these people that did probably terrible things to the early church. And then God completely flips it on him. Says that you're not going to do this anymore. In fact, you're going to be the person that you're going to be the kind of person that you were persecuting. And so I think that this is like my little moment a second ago. This is also a moment of self-reflection for Paul. you guys ever just have moments like that, that self-reflection moment where you're trying to give someone a piece of advice and it just kind of comes back on you? So the only other thing I want to point out about this passage is in verse 16, where he says, "I may be proud that I did not run or labor in vain." Normally we see pride as a negative quality, but I think there are good things for us to have pride in, and this is one of them. It's good to have pride that you're doing the things you're supposed to be doing. Any other thoughts on this passage? Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's reflecting on the example, and this is what chapter 2 is about, is that example. Okay. Anything else? Okay, who would like to read the next section? Let's say 18 to 24, or 19 to 24. Go ahead, Kay. Who's Timothy? He's right there. No, but who's Paul talking about? Yes. Lois Eunice. Okay. His mother and his grandmother. Yeah. He's a very close companion to Paul. I think we don't really know a whole lot about the disciples of the disciples. But Timothy is one of those people that we do know about. So we know that this was a close, intimate relationship with Paul. And so I think that him sending Timothy is special significance. I could be wrong. It could just be nothing. But for him to send this particular person as opposed to anybody really, to me, shows how much Paul cared about the church. And he was invested in their well-being. We don't really know a lot about their particular relationships, but we do know that this one was a very, very close one. I've always got the impression that Paul probably looked after Timothy like a father. What do you guys think? A close bond, yeah.
One day you'll have someone that feel that companionship with.
Mm-hmm.
I can name several people that I feel the relationship that Paul has with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a lot of upward relationships, but I don't think I have any downward relationships like this. There, reading an article last week, and this article talked about companionship or relationships, and it said that you have to spend close to 50 hours with a person for them to move from acquaintance to casual friend. And then you have to spend at least double that time moving from friend to brother or father or that type of relationship. And I thought that was very, very interesting, because essentially what they were saying is time equals closeness, which says a lot about marital relationships. But the amount of time that you would physically have to spend with someone, even if you spend an hour a day with someone, that's basically 100 days it would take for you to build that close relationship. What I thought was interesting about this is that they also talked about the fact that some people can bypass that time altogether. But we know that here this is not the case. Paul and Timothy traveled together quite a bit. So they probably spent thousands of hours together. Yes. I see what you're saying. Of Timothy, it says there's no one like him. And this is obviously personal experience. You are all unique in your own way, but I also know that all of you probably have someone that you hold in very high regard that you would probably put above everyone else. Hopefully not Jesus, but everybody else. And if you're married, that's probably your spouse. Yes, Shirley.
Right,
There's an interesting break here, and I would want to look up, this is one of those things I want to look up in Greek, because I'm not really sure if those two sentences are connected. This ESV words, it's like a, but I see what you're saying. You're probably right. I just want to look at it in the original language. Who's also willing to do it? Okay. Let's move on to 25 to 30. Who would like to read that section? We have a... I know I'm going to botch this name. Eudaphorius? Molly, you're good at names. Is that how you say that? Epaphroditus?
Epaphroditus.
Epaphroditus. Thank you. So who would like to read this section about Epaphroditus? John, go ahead.
But I thought it necessary to send to you Epaphroditus, my brother, fellow worker, and fellow soldier, who is also your messenger and minister to my need. Because he was longing for you all, and was distressed because you had heard that he was sick. For indeed he was sick to the point of death. God had mercy on him, and not on him only, but also on me, so that I would not have sorrow upon sorrow. Therefore I have sent him all the more eagerly, so that
okay. So here in chapter 2, Paul introduces his two important people, and one of them we know is a local, and this is Epaphroditus, who is, we learned a few things about him besides knowing that he comes from Philippi. He is a worker, a messenger, a minister, and a fellow soldier. I think it's interesting that they use the word soldier here. It could be a little bit of a play on words because Philippi is a Roman colony, but it could also be that we often use the imagery of we are soldiers for Christ. So I like that. We see that he was sick. This sickness was very serious because it said he was almost to the point of death. Doesn't really talk a whole lot about the sickness, but we see that he was ill, but now he's not. And it's that God showed mercy on him, and Paul talks about this earlier when he talks about living. He says it's better for him to go to Christ. But now here he says he shows mercy on him by allowing him to stay. If it's, do you guys find this to be a contradiction or no? No? No thoughts? Okay. Yeah, I would agree. I don't think this is a contradiction. I think life is a gift, and God allows us to live this gift. And while we're here, we should take advantage of that gift. And so as soon as he's healed, it's not like, well, I like this. I like what he's saying here. He's like, well, you're better. It's time to go back to work. He's not taking advantage of his sickness. And so Paul says he's very eager to send him. Again, he uses the word rejoice, because that joy makes him less, and probably makes them, he says him, but I also think them is implied, less anxious. Probably a dual fold here, because one, he's no longer sick, but also because he's able to provide them with the comfort that they're going to need, strengthen their faith. One of the things I'm going to talk about in my lesson today is what faith gives us. And faith gives us strength over fear and anxiety. And we get faith by having others encourage us in our faith. And so I think this is one of the reasons Paul is sending him. And I especially appreciate verse 29 where verse 30, where he says, "For he nearly died for the work of Christ, risking his life to complete what was lacking in your service to me." It shows a lot about his dedication, that he was willing to do it right up till probably he couldn't do it anymore. I think that says a lot about who he was as a person, and maybe even a little bit what Paul is kind of expecting of them. Obviously, I don't think you should do things that risk your health. If you're sick, take care of yourself. But don't let worldly things stop you from serving God. Does anybody have an example of like working too hard, where you've made yourself really, really sick? That's why I don't do what you do. I come in at 9 and sit in my office. Probably for the first, I either read or work on my lesson, and then it's not till later that I start to see people. So you get up at what, like 4? 5? Work.
Years old, at least around here, to look
and you're gonna find that with the different people you work with. Some people are going to be very compatible, and others are not going to be at all. That reminds me, when I was in China, we the second time we went with the intent of working with a team, and so Rachel and I went and found two other families that we thought we would be very compatible with, that would work on our team. And while we were very compatible with them, we did not realize that they wouldn't be compatible with each other. And so most of our issues were the other two families and their disagreements. And we just, it became clear that it wasn't going to work. And before we said something, one of them said something to us. And we decided that it would be better for us to go off on our own instead of trying to choose one family over the other. And so we ended up going to a different city. And those two ended up staying together for another year. And though they never, ever were able to work together, they were able to salvage their friendship, which I think was pretty good. And I think that might be what's happening with these two sisters later, is maybe they might not be able to work together, but they can salvage their relationships. And there's also people you just can't work with because your personalities are too different. There's one more point I want to say about this section, and then I think I'll be pretty much done for today. There's not a lot of this paragraph, these two paragraphs we've read, there's not really a whole lot to say on them, mostly because it's exposition, just background information. But Paul uses this phrase, let me see, where is it? He was ill, near to death. I think this phrase is very carefully chosen. One, to remind you how much that he was working, but also because he says this exact same phrase, near to death, or point of death, similar phrase, earlier in the chapter, and that remind you what Christ did on the cross, that he was obedient to the point of death, and that death led to his death on the cross. So he's saying that this particular person is the type of example that we can have when we look to following Christ's example. So, that's pretty much all I have to say. Anyone want to add any closing thoughts? Okay. Let's go to God in prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you for this time that we've had.